This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius. Germanicus is here. We're enjoying ourselves. We have 2,000 years to play with, and so it's fun. But in this instance, we're being disciplined. The Roman Empire, the British Empire, the American Empire. What we learn from lessons in each. The Roman Empire, 1,500 years. It successfully, in the 5th century, made a move to Constantinople and dominated with that triple wall, everything until the cannon showed up with the Ottoman Turks in the 16th century. However, we're dealing now with the American Empire inheriting from directly from the British Empire, Mother England. And in reading about that second full year of war, 1777, after Trenton, after the miracle of Trenton, when Washington continues to lose battles and retreat, there's one victory that matters, and that's Saratoga, Burgoyne. But in the meantime, it's important to look at the two commanders who were loggerheads about how to win the war. One was the commander-in-chief of the British forces in North America, Sir William Howe, born 1729, died 1814. And the other was the commander-in-chief replacing Howe in 1778, Sir Henry Clinton, who had spent a childhood, because his father was a governor in the colonies, and had been a professional soldier ranging across the empire, Canada, Africa. I don't know, he was everywhere. They sent him. He was a problem solver. Clinton believed in hard power, what we, translating, you use the army and you break them, whoever they are. Sir William Howe, although it wasn't written down at the time, now reflecting back as to why they were so frustrated with him, he believed in what we call soft power. He thought that there was no victory over the colonies unless you talk to them, unless you find out what their grievances are. Knowing that he had the command of the greatest navy on the planet. I mean, really, it was the number one weapon system in the solar system at the time. And the army could go anywhere and do anything. They had allies. They had a treasury. And they were variously at war with the Spanish Empire and the French Empire. And no problem. All right, so the question I put to Germanicus, that's enough background, is that America hasn't decided either between the hard power and the soft power. But Sir Henry Clinton made a good point at one point. He was always arguing with Howe. When he came back in 77, he started arguing with him right away. Henry Clinton's point was this. You don't want to be loved. It doesn't help you. You want to be feared. And Howe said, that doesn't win battles, being feared. You've got to talk to them. You've got to negotiate. You've got to recognize that their decision-making is based upon poor information about what we want. We don't want to kill them. We want them to stop the rebellion. And we in the 21st century find sympathetic to Howe's position. But as a Roman citizen in Londinium with Germanicus, I'm going to be difficult and say, Germanicus, suddenly I appreciate Clinton. Hard power. Mm-hmm. If ours together.
Hard power works. And it has many defenders. I remember talking to Ed Luttwak, who's a well-known writer about these matters of war and strategy. And he was arguing, saying, well, look, we don't have a problem with terrorism. Look what the Germans did in Bosnia and Serbia in World War II. And he talked about just going in, wiping out villages. The Germans would just, if a German soldier was killed, they'd go and destroy the whole village. And, you know, that actually didn't work. And Clinton forgot that even the Romans understood that what you win by hard power and then you make a deal, that they can't refuse, meaning your enemy. I mean, the Romans did this for centuries when they would defeat even the Samnites, whom they fought bitterly for 100 years. When they defeated them, they said, oh, you can be so key. All you have to do as allies is you have to give us a contingents of soldiers to fight with us. And we're not going to extract any tribute. And, you know, and you'll have all your soldiers will get just as much, which is to say an equal share of the booty on some foreign campaign as our soldiers get. So effectively, Rome defeated them and then co-opted them. It did that in Gaul as well. It did that in many, many places successfully. The one place it didn't, of course, was Carthage. But Carthage was small enough to be destroyed. I mean, Carthage had lost all of its hinterland at that point. And so all the Romans had to do, and it wasn't easy for the Romans, and they made many mistakes. But when they finally took Carthage, they could slaughter everyone and sell the rest into slavery, which is what they did. And the Romans would do that with smaller tribal nations, you know. But this wasn't possible in the colonies. The colonies were huge. Huge geographically, but also several million people, not that much smaller than England. And England was already in a position where it was occupying Scotland and Ireland. So it was not easy for Britain to try and use main force against the colonists. But I have to say, and if I were to put Clinton side by side with Howe, Howe blew it. He blew it in the campaign that ended with Trenton, and then he blew it in a completely feckless campaign that took Philadelphia, where the British Army stayed for like 5 months, and all they did is party. And then they had to come back, and Cornwallis, the field commander, had to somehow get the British out of a very difficult situation at the Battle of Monmouth. Now, in comparison, what Clinton was able to do is take Charleston. He had this idea for the South. He took Charleston and then captured a small army of colonials, over 5,000, and then completely blew the rest of the colonial army apart in a quite a decisive battle. And the entire South was his, meaning everything from North Carolina down. And then he did something inexplicable. It was consonant with his character, but it was a gigantic error. He demanded a loyalty oath. He put people on the spot, and that ruined things. And he lost, you know, the Americans would talk about hearts and minds in Vietnam. Well, he lost every opportunity he had in a place which had the largest contingent or proportion of loyalists in the whole of the 13 colonies. And that was a strategic error. And then Howe would not have made that error. And so it seems to me that this is not an either or about being, you know, you do it through main force and people will submit, or you make them a good offer. I think it's much more subtle than that, and you need just the right mix. One of the things that we can say about Caesar is not only that he was a great general and a terrific politician and orator, not to mention writer, but one of the reasons he succeeded in his Gallic Wars was he knew the Gauls. He knew them completely. And so he was able to develop all of these deep relationships, which really paid off. And this is the weakness of America, is it has no feel for other cultures, no capacity to truly respect them as equals. Everything is either or. Either you do what we say, or if necessary, we'll come and make you submit. What's fascinating about the British, and here the main figure to identify is not Clinton or Howe, it's Cornwallis. Cornwallis, in many ways, assimilated and incorporated within himself what he had seen in on the field year after year campaigning in the colonies. And so he went to India as governor general. He was tremendously successful. And he set the pattern for the British essentially creating the Indian Empire through co-optation, through bloody battles, yes, followed by co-optation. And that was very Roman, and it was very successful. And it is amazing to see how the British were able to essentially conquer, if conquer is the right word, take in all of India, which was huge beyond compare, and yet have failed in the American colonies. It's a lesson that we should explore more as Americans, because if we're ever going to effectively deal with Iran or Russia or China, we need to understand how you can assert authority, and it's not just through main force.
Germanicus is Marco Vlahos. I'm Gaius John Metzler. We've enjoyed comparing the 21st century to first the 18th, and then, of course, to our own times, dealing with the Germans in the 2nd century AD. There are breakdowns in all instances, but you look for the high points that work, and then you come back. We'll continue the case in future weeks. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. We're headed to Sacrifice to Augustus. There's no theater tonight. For some reason, there was a fire. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure how. It happens. And they've asked for a couple of weeks to rebuild the stage. So we'll sacrifice to Augustus and we'll go on our way. Thank you. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.